So I think a lot of us struggle with the mitzvah to wipe out Amalek. Definitely something I struggle with. And we're going to look at one angle on that problem today. I just want to point out two other angles that I'm not addressing. Because I think when you're thinking about this problem, I would keep three things in mind. Okay, one thing to keep in mind is that this is a very, very small part of Torah. Right? There's one mitzvah where the Gemara says the Torah repeats it 36 times. I don't know which mitzvah that is. Which mitzvah, according to the Gemara, is the, yeah, to be nice to the convert. Okay? It does not repeat 36 times to wipe out a mullet. Okay? It's not an accident. Right? The main theme of Torah is compassion and not destruction. Okay, so whenever we deal with these mitzvot, I think we should keep that in mind, a little context. The second thing is I'm not addressing today what are the criteria for when one would fulfill this mitzvah. It could be there are many, many restrictions. Maybe you need a Navi, maybe you need a Melech, maybe you need a Sanhedrin. Right? There might be many, many restrictions upon fulfilling this mitzvah, and we're not addressing that either. We're going to address a third point, which I think maybe is the most fundamental point. Obviously, one of the things that bothers us about the idea of wiping out Amalek is the idea that someone is trapped by their genetics, trapped by their ethnicity. And if Amalekites can convert, that would change the conversation. Right? That would indicate you're not trapped by your ethnicity. Right? You could leave Amalek and get another identity. So to me, it's a pretty significant question if that's true enough. So that's what we have here. So we do something not so yeshivish. We'll start with a little Tanakh. Okay? Here we go. It's okay. We don't have to be yeshivish today. Because we've got, looking around with all our long-haired fellows, we don't have to be so yeshivish. Got the top five long-haired guys. Okay, by the way, Jared Horak is now in for first. It used to be a Kiyos webinar. He's down to number five now. Okay. Okay. Langer's number two. Okay. Then a Samson Schiff. And I'm not sure they count Natan Rubin now, because Natan Rubin is the only guy that actually looks good on. Okay. All right. Okay. Here we go. I didn't even plan that one ahead of time. It just came to me now. Okay, so we look at the end of Sefer Shmuel Aleph and the beginning of Shmuel Bet. Okay, so there's a discussion of the death of Shaul. And a lot of interesting things emerge. So the first time this happens is the end of Shmuel Aleph. What do we have there? They're waging war with the Plishtim, and the war is going poorly. But I don't know if you noticed this, but actually, what does Shaul say? How does he refer to the Plishtim? He doesn't use the word Plishtim. What does he say? Anyone remember what he calls them? Arelim. So someone once said to me, I didn't look into it, that in the ancient world, it wasn't just Jews who got circumcision, other peoples did too, but the Plishtim never did. So maybe a symbol for the Plishtim would be Arelim. They're the uncircumcised ones of the ancient world. Right? They're the Arelim. And Shaul's on the battlefield. Just some good phrases to know. He talks to his Nosei Kelav. What's a Nosei Kelim? Yeah, it's shield bearer, right? Literally. Nosei Kelim, the one who carries right, the implements. So it's interesting that that became a phrase in Jewish learning. I don't know where it comes up in Jewish learning. Nosei Kelim. So if you're reading the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, the commentaries on the side are often referred to as, the thing about it, it's a good imagery, right? You have the warrior accompanied by the shield bearer, right? So you have the Rambam accompanied by, you know, the Kesem Mishneh and the Magen Mishneh. So you hear that phrase in yeshiva context, Nosei Kelim, it does not mean that someone's carrying the Rambam sword, right? It means the person who's commenting on the side of the page on the Rambam. Okay, so Shaul says to his Nosei Kelim, right, Shlaf Karbacha Utakareni. What does he want the guy to do? To kill him. He doesn't want to be captured. Right? He's not going to be captured in war. You know, if he's captured in war, Trump will decide he's not a war hero, so he can't be captured. Right? So so he says, to kill me. Okay, where's Benny Weiser when you need him? Okay. You know, I made it through all of Ella without making an anti-Trump comment, just to be nice to Benny Weiser. Okay. So what happens at the end, though? Okay, what happens at the end? According to the first account, what happens, guys? What does Shaul do? He kills himself. Right? He doesn't be captured by the Arelim, by the Plishtim, he kills himself. It is not my topic here, but there's a whole other halakha conversation we could have now. Are there situations where halakha would actually allow suicide? Our general assumption is that it's totally forbidden in Judaism to kill yourself. Right? There's interesting midrashim. How do we evaluate this act of Shaul? What if you're doing it to avoid capture? What if you're doing it to avoid torture? Are there any exceptions to this rule? So we're not discussing right now, but file it away. If you want to investigate that, this story is a good place to start, where Shaul kills himself. Okay, great. So that's the account in Shmuel Aleph. They're losing to the Plishtim. He's on the battlefield. He doesn't be captured by the Plishtim, and he kills himself. However, if we then move from Perek from Shmuel Aleph to Shmuel Bet, something a little different happens. We have David waiting, and someone runs, a classic scene, someone runs from the battle scene to David, and it's a nar. Okay, so David asks him for a report, and he says, but he also says, Viomelo Miata, Vayomer Elav, Amaleki Anochi. So quite fascinatingly, this fellow from the battle seems to be from Amalek. And Amalek does not come up that often in Tanakh. So we've got an Amalekite coming from the battlefield. Okay, so then what does he say? What does the Amalekite report? I saw King Shaul mortally wounded, and what did I do? I finished him off. So this is a little bit, seems like a slightly different account. Here we see, no, it was actually the Amaleki who did it. Okay, and then at one point he says, David asks him, Amy Zata, Vayomer Benish, Ger Amaleki Anochi. What does it sound like now? Now he's an Amalekite, but he's a convert. Right, so it seems, oh, that's pretty good. Now it seems to be an open and shut case that people from Amalek can convert to Judaism. If this guy's a Ger Amaleki, he apparently converted. And then David says to him, Vayomer Elav David, Eichlo Yoreti L'Shlochia B'Shachet Mashiach Hashem. How is it you didn't fear to smite the anointed one of God? Namely, what is David faulting for? Killing Shaul. You shouldn't have killed Shaul. And then David says, we should kill this fellow. But Yom Elav David, Damecha al Rashecha, Ki Picha na Bechal Emor, Anochi Motetai Mashiach Hashem. So David even seems to explain why this Amaleki is in trouble. He's in trouble because he killed Shaul. Doesn't seem like he's in trouble in the slightest because he's from Amalek. So if you just had this story, it sounds like we're in good shape. Amalekites can convert. He's a Ger Amaleki. And in fact, his being from Amalek has nothing to do with David's treatment of him. David's harsh treatment of him is because he killed Shaul. Apparently that was a crime that David could not forgive. Okay, welcome to that so far. Okay, now if we were just giving a Tanakh shir and not a Gemara shir, okay, let's think for a second. What would be possible ways to reconcile the end of Shmuel Aleph with the beginning of Shmuel Bet? The end of Shmuel Aleph seems to have Shaul committing suicide. The beginning of Shmuel Bet seems to have the Ger Amaleki finishing off Shaul. What would be, yes, Simon? Okay, excellent. So Simon's right. You could easily read it as Shaul tries to impale himself. It's not an immediate, instantaneous process. You don't always meet immediate success. He's still alive. And then the Ger Amaleki comes by and finishes him off. Correct. Very good, Simon. Okay, Simon, you think it's clear in the Pesukim?
I'll read the English from the Koran.
Wait, Simon, your Hebrew's pretty good. Why do you read Hebrew?
I read Hebrew.
Okay. Okay, very good. Okay, yeah, Moses.
In the scene, like in Shmuel, it says that the armor bearer saw that he was dead, so the armor bearer killed him.
Right.
So, like, it kind of doesn't.
Although you could say that happened after the Ger Amaleki did his thing, right? Yeah, but I forgot to give credit, guys. We have this whole Shirkoli thanks to Moses Beebe and Remy Nuess. Okay, one night study, they came over to learn with me, and this came up, and I looked into it. It worked out very nicely. See, guys, you come ask me a question, you might inspire us, your colleague. Yes.
I kind of find it interesting that Shaul was commanded to kill Amalek. And
yes. Okay, very good. John Seidel, excellent Tanakh point. Okay, there are very few times in Tanakh where we encounter Amalek. Okay, the only explicit time after Chumash where we actually try to fulfill the mitzvah is, of course, at the time of Shaul. There's one story in Tanakh where we try to wipe out Amalek. Right, there's the time of Shaul. And Shaul famously doesn't do it. He spares. Who does he spare? Agag the king. Right, he spares a king named Agag. By the way, I will point out, sometimes people think that Shaul was like a big humanitarian for sparing Agag. I think one could argue very much, if you kill everybody and spare the king, that's probably not because you have humanitarian impulses. Okay? It might be based on other things. But in any case, right, that is what Shaul does, and he's faulted. So John's right, the certain irony, if that would be true, if some of Shaul's fault is in the Amalek context, that he's then finished off by... Okay, okay, John, put that in your parish and small. Very good. Okay, yeah. It's such a good shot that the Torah Tumah says it.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get there in a minute. Okay, so we got the Tanakh done. Yeah, Jonah.
Can you also say that maybe David was just like so shocked or like so overgrieved that like he killed his disbelief that he is
No, but still, but is he? Which reason is he killing him for? Because he's from Amalek or because he killed Shaul?
Because Shaul was dead. Like
he's just lashing out?
Yeah, he's just like putting the blame on the guy.
Right, it seems pretty harsh. The guy didn't even do anything. I think it's difficult. Okay, where's Jordan Cohen? You out there? Okay, where's Uri Bolzman? I want to talk to him Hebrew. Okay, good. We'll get him soon. Okay, humechin et hacholent. Okay, so let's go to the mechilta. First is, people should know what the mechilta is. Okay, when I say the word midrash, most people think midrash, what's called midrash agadah. would be more like stories. Like, what, when you hear the word midrash, what do you think of? Oh, Og is hanging on to the teva. Or Avram is destroying the idols in his father's workshop. Right? That's what we tend to think of when we hear the word midrash. But that's what's called midrash agadah. And again, guys, what's the most famous midrash agadah? What's it called? Medrash Rabbah. Very good. Medrash Rabbah. However, there's another kind of work which most of you are not so familiar with called midrash halakha. These are works not about the agadic parts of Chumash, but deriving halacha from the psukim. Okay, and just get just the names down, just names you should know. The one on Shmot is called Mechilta. The one on Vayikra is, anyone know about it? The one on Vayikra is called Sifra. Very good. And the one on Bamidbar and Dvarim is called Sifri. Very good. Okay, so Mechilta, again, just get down. Shmot, Mechilta, Vayikra, Sifra, Bamidbar and Dvarim, Sifri. Okay, now for my favorite trick question. Noam Kaplan, what do you call the Medrash Halacha on Breshit? It's a trick question. Okay, there is none. Why is there no Medrash Halacha on Breshit? Yeah, and only three mitzvot in Breshit. So it would be as, I always make the same joke, as I would like to say, it would be like Jewish sports heroes. It would be very thin volume. Okay, so I stole that from Airplane. But in any case, Mechilta is a Medrash Halacha. So what we have here. Rabbi, what did the Mechilta say? Rabbi Lezer Omer, Nishba HaMakom B'Kisi HaKavod, so God took an oath. Shim Yavo Echad Mikol Mod Olam L'Gayer. And it comes from any nation to convert. You're French, you're Romanian, right? You're from Ethiopia. Shia Kablu. What's our position? Yeah, it's a very beautiful idea of Judaism, right? Anybody can become a Jew. There it is. I don't care what nationality you come from. You're serious. You can join the team. Ula Malek Ula Beito Lo Yikablu. But according to this Mechilta, there's one exception. We'll take any Italian and any, you know, Spaniard. Amalekites can't. Amalekites cannot convert to Judaism. Okay, Shinema Vyomer David Lanar Magal Emizaata, Vyom Benish Kira Maloki Anochi. Okay, now notice, it's very interesting. What does the Mechilta think is the source for this idea? The story we just read. Nizkar David Botosha Mashinem Moshe Rabbeinu, Im Yavoachan Mikolo Moshe Balan Legayer Shi Kablu, Umbeit Toshamak Shaloi Kablu. Ah, what did the Mechilta say? What did David remember when the fellow said he's a Gera Maliki? That we don't accept converts from Amalek. So it sounds like according to Mechilta, why did David kill this fellow? Because from Amalek, not because he killed Shaul. Right? So even though the simple reading of Psukim was that he was a real Gera Maliki, and we can get converts from Amalek, this Mechilta would argue, you know, you can't get converts from everybody, but not Amalek. You can't get converts from Amalek. And that's why David killed him. And I think we all realize right away, it's not such an easy reading fit with this Mechilta and the Pasuk. Because again, what does David emphasize in the Pasuk? How did you raise your hand against Mashiach Hashem? It doesn't sound like David is focusing on the Amalek identity. It sounds like he's focusing on the act of killing Shaul. Okay, welcome to that so far. Everyone agree that's a problem for the Mechilta? Okay. So this is a very good sefer to know about in school historical introduction. Okay, so there's a sefer called Torah Tmima by Rabbi Baruch Epstein. Okay, he's from a very interesting rabbinic family. His father was a famous Rav. Okay, I only hope it might be Alex Kasdan or maybe 00. Okay, 00, how's your Jewish history? Okay. All right, everyone know who the Torah Tmima's father was, right? Baruch Epstein. Very good. Oh, Jordan Stauber. Okay, very good. Okay, Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein wrote an important halachic work called Orach HaShulchan. Again, Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein. And his son was Rav Baruch Epstein. One of the interesting things about him, there's many interesting things about him, he wrote an autobiography. Not so many rabbis wrote autobiographies. It's quite interesting, his autobiography. Called Makor Baruch. And he, what do I want to say? He was a businessman, actually. He didn't actually work in the rabbinate. And the third thing I want to say about him is that he wrote a very important sefer because one of the hardest things to do in Gemara, I often find that the Gemara, this is a good rule for life, guys. When the Gemara makes a logical point, 99 out of 100 times I can understand the point. But when the Gemara reads Psukim, it's very hard to understand what the methodology of how the Gemara reads Psukim. So that's what the Torah Tmim is solely dedicated to, right? He quotes a list of Midrashim and Drashot and halachic derivations, tries to explain how they got from the Pasuk to the Drasha. So anytime you have a Drasha you're curious about, and you're trying to figure, struggle with, I always go to the Torah Tmim. Very balls of Migata. Mama Tzav Shal Cholent. Okay. Yeah. What's up, Jordan?
Is there any
No, unfortunately not. Jordan, that could be in the... Jordan? I'm busy already. You can do it, Jordan. Okay. So let's go to... Yeah, Samson.
Could the Pasuk says, like, when the Dove asks why we've gone against Mashiach and Shem, would that be referring to, like, Moshe?
Samson's very clever. But it sounds like he's blaming this guy more on an individual basis. Right? It's very clever what he tried to do. Right back to the original Amalek story. I think it's incorrect, but it's very clever. Okay? So let's go to the Torah Tmima. So he says, Vani Tama Ma'od. I can't understand this. Halo b'pasuk mevuar sibah shabavura hargo David. Oh, Uri Bozum, it's a crucial word. Maza sibah. Not Misiba, Siba.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, that's okay. That's Takida, you live there. Okay. Joey Trubnik? Yes, the reason. Okay, so what is the reason? Let's read the psukim. It's clear that's because he called Joel. Okay, so let's skip down to the Drush Hazeh, the fifth line. Again, remember what Drush Hazeh, what is the Torah to dedicate to doing? Trying to show how you could derive an idea from the pasuk. So how did Mechilta get this idea from the psukim? It doesn't sound that way. Hadorish Hazeh Midayek. Very good word to know. Midayek. He's making inference. He's reading carefully. Lam hitvakeach kokach David Menarze. V'gam, a great word to my guys. For crucial on Hebrew. Gam hit not sail al hemito oto. V'shepivanabo. What's the hit not sail? Yeah, very good. It's almost like, very good. In modern Hebrew, it says, I'm not sail, you're apologizing. Okay, so someone like David apologized for killing the guy. David gives a whole speech. This is why I'm doing it. Why is David giving such a speech? Look what he says now. It's interesting the way he phrased it. What does Torah say? David HaMelech, you could say a lot of things about him, but he was comfortable with people who needed to be put to death. He did it sometimes. He doesn't always give a speech apologizing. So why is he giving a speech here? Maybe that's some of the inference. Okay, here we go. Whoa, what does he say? It's not even true. What an interesting reading the story. What's the claim? Yeah, Simon? Yeah, the Nar Makid that I want David to like me. And maybe Shaul's out to get David. So if I tell the David that I killed Shaul, I'll be the hero of the kingdom. So it's not a true story at all. But a lot of people try to take advantage. Who knows what happened on the battlefield? I'll tell stories about my daring feats on the battlefield. So the Nar comes and tells David, I killed Joel, but David was able to tell that it wasn't true. Right? So obviously that would help him very much in terms of the Mechilta, because then the only remaining reason why David could have killed the boy is because he's from a mic. Look at the last six words. Varak lower to Lefarish is there go. So what's the one that you have to work out? I skipped the rest of the few lines. Anyone wants to go look it up? You have to come with some theory why, when David explains what he did, it's almost like David misleads everybody. David, according to his reading, David actually kills him because he's up from Amalek, but David acts as if he killed him because he killed Joel. Right? He covers it up. Why he does that is a topic for another time. Everyone good so far? Now, somebody asked me what motivates this Torah Tamima. So first of all, he wants to help the Mechilta. But by the way, what other problem in terms of Tanakh did he just solve? He also solved the problem in Tanakh. Forget about this Mechilta. How do you reconcile the first account? Right, he's also solved that. Maybe that's also motivating him. Right? Again, if you have two things in Tanakh that contradict, you could try to reconcile them. You could say, like Simon Ganellis, first Shaul committed suicide, but he hadn't succeeded, and then the Narmah Ki finished him off. Or you could say that one account is not true. Someone is misrepresenting the information. So according to the Torah Tamima, we have an easy solution. Okay, we're all good so far? Great. Okay, let's go to the Ralbag. Before I have to introduce him, we have a lot of interesting people to introduce. A lot of good history today. Okay, Ralbag was a Rishon, and Levi Ben Gershom. He was a philosopher and an astronomer. Believe it or not, guys, there is a crater on the moon. I think there's a crater on the moon named after him. Go look him up on Wikipedia. Okay, he was a well-known astronomer, and he was even a super rationalist. He was so rationalistic, he made the Rambam look like a crazy mystic. Okay, so that's the Ralbag. He's Mr. Rationalist. Okay, so let's see what the Ralbag says. He also wrote a parish on Tanakh. V'yidmesh zeh hanar ha-mivaser. Oh, good word? Mivaser? Yeah, to tell news, right? People say something, besurot tovot, good tidings, good news. Okay, so what did this youth say? Lo yagir tzedek. No, till now we've been assuming he converted to Judaism. It's not true. V'yapi shamar ben ishkir ha-maliki, kfar amar zeh lo-roch, eino maliki be'emet, avo aviv hit gorer be'eretz amalek. That would change everything. Maybe what does he mean when he says ger amaliki? My family moved to the Amalek area, but he is not biologically a descendant of Amalek. So obviously that would also help the Mechilta. So just to sum up for 1 second, we're at this point. If one wanted to go with the Mechilta that Amalekites can't convert, how would one address, say, for Shmuel? So you could go like the Torah Tamima, that indeed they can't, and that's in fact why David killed the youth. Or you could go with the Ralbag and say, this youth was not Amalekite in the slightest. That's not what ger Amaleki means. Ger Amaleki simply means his family moved to the area of Amalek. Okay? We're good? Okay, great. But let's go in that direction. Let's say you're not so happy now. Because let's say you're like me, you like the idea that you're not genetically trapped, that you could escape your Amalek identity. So let's go to a really interesting Gemara in Gittin. Okay, in the fifth Perek of Gittin is a whole string of Agadata. The most famous one, you guys might have learned in your camps on Tisha B'Av. I don't remember what's there, how it starts. What's the classic Gemara to learn on Tisha B'Av? That's what you guys do, Rabbi Kiva and the Fox? That's in Makkot, actually. It's pretty classical. No, they don't do Kamps and Bar Kamps on your camps? No? Okay, so that's where it starts, this Gemara in... I always have the same question every Tisha B'Av, because I'll tell you something. I have to confess something. Why are you not allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av? Because it's enjoyable. Why are you allowed to learn Eicha, Yirmiyahu, or Kamsa, Bar Kamsa? Because some sin is, if you're learning about the Korban, it's depressing. So I cheat, and I'm able to do that, but I admit I enjoy it every time when I learn Kamsa, Bar Kamsa. So I probably should not do that. But what do you do? I rely on the technicality. Okay. What? Yeah. So truth is, he really two points. Yeah, you're right. You could have just said he was a real convert, but he wasn't actually a Amalekite. It sounds like he's also saying he wasn't even a real convert. Ger just means he dwelled among the Amalekites. Yeah, what's the answer? Why did David kill him? Because he killed Joel. That was the simplest shot in the Pesukim. That's what David says after all, right? Yeah. Alex. Look, there is a drasha of Soloveitchik where he kind of suggests ideological Amalek as opposed to biological Amalek, but the simplest thing halachic source that we're talking about biology. Okay? Alex, you're on the anti-hair group. Okay? All right. So let's go to the Gemara in Gittin. Okay? Let's go on the Gemara in Gittin. Okay, so what does it say here? An amazing Gemara. Mibnei banav shel Haman lamdu Torah bibnei Barak. The descendants of Haman, they're sitting there in yeshiva. How do you like that? And most of you love it. Right, they're learning Torah B'nei Barak, going through Tosfos as we speak. Okay, now, I admit there is a little bit of a question here, because you have to assume something. It doesn't ever say in the Megillah that Haman was descended from Amalek, but it's a pretty standard assumption in Chazal that Haman's from Amalek. Why? Because he's called Haman Ha'agagi, and then you relate that back to Agag, the king of Amalek, who shall spare. So, I think even though it's not clear in the Pesukim, the assumption of Chazal is that Haman's from the Amalek descent. So that would be, that's interesting. What does it sound like once again? Okay. Sounds like you can join the Jewish people. If they're like the stars of Yeshiva and B'nai Brak, I guess the Amalekites can convert. We have a source on the other side. Okay, there's even better guys. Who are the descendants of Sancheirev who destroyed the Tzeret HaShvatim? Man Inun, Shmaya Vavtayin. How do you like that? Oh, yeah. You open Pirkei Avot, you get the, here's our Jewish historian, Mr. Anti-Tinek. You get to Shmaya Naftalion, right? Shmaya Naftalion, and they're descendants of Sancheirev. So it's a very nice Gemara. It doesn't matter where you come from. If you come from any kind of background, you could become an important player in the Jewish people. Okay, great. So now, obviously, what do we have? What should we do about the Mechilta on one side and Masechet Gittin on the other? Again, if we just have the Mechilta, it sounds like you can't be a convert from Amalek. If we have Masechet Gittin, it sounds very much like you can. Zach Katz. Yeah, I don't think you can convert to Amalek. Well, that gets to Alex's question a little bit. Yeah, I don't think anyone ever practically suggested you could kill someone because they identify with Amalek. It could be if they do certain things that might be worthy of being killed, but the mere declaration of your identity, I don't think you can do it. Okay? We like to be machmir, but not killing people. Okay, Zach Katz? Okay, great. So let's go to source 6. This is an amazing Rambam. Okay? Here we go. Says the Rambam. Now, this is actually one of the advantages of Rambam over Shulchan Aruch and Tur. Remember, what's the biggest difference in the Rambam's halachic code and the Tur and Shulchan Aruch? Yes, Joe Stanton is correct. The Rambam covered all of Torah. You can look up laws of Tum and Tara, you can look up the sacrificial order, you can look up Jewish governments. None of that stuff is covered in the Tur and Shulchan Aruch. So the Rambam, really, the Mishnah Torah is an amazing feat. Imagine writing about halacha that no one's practiced for 800 years, and the Rambam had it all at his fingertips. So one of the most interesting parts is called Hilchot Malachim. How does Jewish army work? How does Jewish government work? At the end, he talks about the Messianic era. It's the last set of halachot in the Rambam. Says the Rambam, Eino sim l'chamam adam bo'olam, ad shekurin lo shalom. Oh, you got to love this if you have liberal tendencies. We never make war with anybody unless there's always a peace offering first. Look what he says next line. Unless there's a peace offering first. Echad milchemet reshud ve'echad milchemet mitzvah. Now, what might someone say if the Rambam had stopped? Oh, that's only for a voluntary war. But in Chemet Mitzvah, we don't make a peace request. What the Rambam says clearly is you grunt. No, it's not true. Even Mechem Mitzvah, there has to be some kind of shalom. Okay, now what are the terms of peace? Let's keep reading. Im hishlimo, if the other group, the non-Jewish group, makes peace, the kiblu sheva mitzvot shenistav b'nei noach alehen. Right, apparently part of the peace agreement is they have to be normal, moral, civilized people. So how does that work? They accept to keep the Noahide laws, right? They won't kill, they won't steal. If they accept that, ein horgin me'en neshama, we don't kill any of them. V'arein lamas, and they pay some kind of mas, tax or tribute, okay? So we do that peace agreement, that's Aleph. Now again, remember, the peace agreement is for everybody, whether it's Mechamet Rashut or Mechamet Mitzvah. Okay, what did the Ram say in Halakha Dalet? Im lo hishlimu, if they didn't make peace, oh, sheshlimu v'lo kibbul shem mitzvot. Or they say, oh, sure, we like peace, but we want to still kill and rape. Right? So in either of those cases, there's no peace agreement. Then notice what happens all of a sudden. Then there's a discrepancy between other nations and Amalek and the seven nations. Right? There's a greater total annihilation when it comes to Amalek and the seven nations vis-a-vis fighting war with Spain or Italy. You haven't got that down? But what does that clearly indicate, though, from if that's true? That even Amalek has the possibility of peace, but even more strongly, what does that peace entail? Taking on not even full conversion, right? The Rambam is taking us one step further, right? I was happy by the Gemara and Megiddin, because the Gemara and Megiddin seems to suggest they could become yeshiva guys. Amalekites can convert to Judaism. According to the Rambam, they didn't have to go that far. What's all they have to do? Make peace and say, we'll keep the Noahide laws. Right, so this is very surprising. Most people in the street would not know this. Try it. Next time you're on a bus talking to the yeshiva guy, ask him what happens if Amalekites take on the seven mitzvahs of Sfeinoch. Right, he'll say, we kill them anyway. Say, you didn't learn your Rambam. Yeah, Zakat. I mean, you want to have this plays out in Tanakh?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a good question for us right now.
I mean, like, maybe
he just killed them in the Shul scenario?
It's
a good question how we read Sefer Malachim, but I don't want to get into it. Yeah.
You think this says that the Rambam, how bad the Rambam thinks Amalek were? Because this is such a big step for them, just accepting the Noahide laws, that it completely changes the status from we have to kill them all to they can
just... Look, you could say it that way. I don't think you have to say it that way. Okay, I mean, it plays out the same with other nations also, right? Other nations accept the Noahide laws and we let it be. You say it's the contrast that's really striking to you?
Yeah, we don't have a mitzvah.
Okay. You maybe you're right. Okay, let's go to the next page. Okay, I'm going to skip the Rive for now and go to the Kesem Mishnah. Now, if you remember the terminology, guys, Kesem Mishnah is one of the no-say Kelim on the Rambam. Okay? It was written by Yosef Cairo. So he's trying to defend the Rambam. He says, Elish Efshel Ton Bad Rabbeinu. Guys, when you're commenting on somebody, so Rabbeinu is always the person you're commenting on. Okay, so Rabbeinu is the Rambam. Okay, Shebechlal Hishlimu Hu Kabbalat Shev Mitzvot. So you guys want to say it sharply, you know what you could say? Okay, because what do we seem to be learning now? Destroying Amalek is not universal. You could say, no, it's not true. Destroying Amalek is categorical. Anytime you meet an Amalekite, you kill him. So how can you justify the Rambam? What's the way to say it? Somebody who has taken on the Noahide laws, Alex Mawson, is no longer, he's changed his identity. He's put on a new suit. Right, what do you mean? He's a normal, moral person. Right, he is no longer... So here, you do move a little bit away from the genetic definition. Right, what we seem to have here, you're an Amalekite until you've taken this on. If you've taken this on, you've changed your identity. Right, you're no longer an Amalekite, and therefore we would not have to kill you. So I think we have a pretty strong moral point here, according to the Rambam. Not even full conversion, just becoming a Noahide can get you out of your Amalek status. Okay, Jake Matroni, how's it going there? Okay, guys, I discovered something today. Jacob Matroni on his makom has a little tefillah haderech. He says it before he takes any of his metaphysical journeys. Okay, that's why it's in the Beit Midrash. Okay, let's go. Okay, let us go to 9 here. Okay, this is an important person to know. Okay, as I was discussing with my morning shift this morning, okay, the Soloveitchik family is a very unusual family in that for 4 or 5 generations in a row, there's a very, very important rabbi. Right, you have Beis Halevi, then Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Reb Chaim has 2 sons, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, who moves to New York and teaches in YU in the 1930s, and Reb Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, who moves to Yerushalayim, and that's why there's a brisk yeshiva in Yerushalayim today. They're the descendants of Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, and the Rav Soloveitchik, who's famous in our community, is Reb Moshe's son. Okay, so again, it's Beis Halevi, Reb Chaim, then Reb Moshe and Reb Yitzchak Zev, and Reb Moshe's son is another Reb Yosef Tov, the Rav. By the way, the Grizz is very interesting where he lived. Oh, it's not true anymore. You guys know Meir Sharman Gulo pretty well, or not at all? is, you know, if you're on the Yesharim and your back is to Yecheskel and you're facing towards town, right? So to the left is Strauss and right is Yeshayahu HaNavi, Rechov Yeshayahu.
Yeah.
Used to be a movie theater there called the Edison Theater. Okay, so the Grizz lived right there, like on top of the Edison Theater. He didn't really see too many movies, but he did live there. Okay, so that was the Grizz. Okay, so let's see what the Grizz says. So the Grizz is going to, now, as we know, who do the Briskers really love? Who's their favorite Rishon?
Rambam.
Very good. Who said that? Okay. No, how do you know that? Shalhevet knew Grizzes?
A
little bit. Rav, did you hear that? He knows the Grizz from Shalhevet. Okay, so the Grizz is going to try to justify the Rambam. Let's see what he says here. But Yeshalcheu Hashem Baderech, this is the one time, again, they're the command to wipe out Amalek. But Yom Lecha, what does God say? Leich vechramta et hachataim et Amalek. Now, this is a great reading of the Grizz. This is usually not known for Tanakh, usually known for Gemara and Rambam. But he says, what are they told here? Destroy who? The sinners Amalek. What's obvious? Isn't that a little superfluous? Wouldn't the pasuk work just when you said Leich vechramta et Amalek? So what does the Grizz want to claim? They're only Amalek because they are Chataim. So that's a source for Rambam. Would they take on the Noachide laws and no longer be Chataim, then it wouldn't apply. Right? So the Grizz, what's the claim? If you read Shmuel carefully, that supports Rambam's theory. Yeah. No, but wouldn't they lead to the same practical result? Or no? Ah, I got it. Very good. You just said a very good distinction. That's very good. You're on the right track there. Right. You want to say that, okay, Jordan has been very clever, actually. Let's go back for a second. What do we have? We have the Mechilta saying that you can't convert if you're from Malik. We have the Gemara and Gittin that seems to indicate. If they're learning Yeshiva, presumably they converted. Jordan's right. The Rambam said they could make out Noachai laws and then not be killed. So Jordan said very cleverly, that still doesn't contradict the Mechilta. Because what could one argue? If they take on the Noachai laws, we don't kill them. But maybe we still don't allow them to convert. So that's very good. That'd be a strategy. Here we're going to get to the crucial thing, guys. It's going to be the last question of the day. Which is, there's two impulses in this world sometimes. One impulse to say, there's just machlok in our tradition. It's okay, machlok is healthy. Right? Another impulse to say, I want to reconcile everybody. I want to make all the sources fit together. One grand thing where nobody argues. So if you wanted to do that, you'd have to work this out. Well, can we reconcile, let's say, Rambam with Mechilta? Or can we reconcile the Gemara and Gittin with Mechilta? Or should we not try to reconcile everybody all the time? Right? That's really where we're standing right here. Okay, Jordan, you're on the right track. Okay, any other comments? Yeah, Jacob. Right, so Alex wanted to suggest that beforehand, and I admit that according to the Rambam, there's a step in that direction. Once you, I had the Kesef Mishnah say it. According to the Kesef Mishnah, once you're a Noachide, you're a moral person, you're no longer an Amalekite. Right, so there is an element where it's ideological and not genetic. Correct? That emerges from this theory. Okay? So let's go a little out of order and deal with Jordan's point. Let's go to source 13. Okay, he's a good person to know. Okay, there was a Rav in Bnei Brak named Rav Eliezer Waldenberg. He wrote many, many tshuvot. He passed away about a decade ago. And the tshuvot are called Tzitz Eliezer. Okay? And sometimes in tshuvot, you get interesting quotes from other people. So here he talks about a discussion he had with a different fellow. Look what he says here in Source 13. Val divrei ha'avni nezer elakatli uzmano ha'gon abezdin de tshabim. Okay, so this is a fellow who was the Rav from Tshabim. I don't remember his name. Okay? Ravadi, do you remember? I don't remember his name. So let's see what the Rav from Tshabim says. B'yil ha'ashon. B'yunai re'iti shekvat kvot rato hevi b'shem avni nezer shel ram mechilta perish b'shalach de'ein mekabim ger mamalek. So Avni Nezer says, wait, Rambam, you say that I can't convert, but it's against... Now, he thinks the Rambam is against the Mechilta. Right, according to the Rambam, they can convert. According to the Mechilta, they can't. Now, Jordan's made a good point. Wait, does the Rambam clearly think they can convert? So he says, V'dan Avni Nezer mikal v'chomer. Im gerim gurme ein makablim. Koshkein im ein makablim. Rakshim mitzvah, shein makabnoto. Now, this is fascinating. Which way, guys, one of the interesting things about kal v'chomer is which way did the kal v'chomer work? Okay, so I'll give you a good rule for life, because everyone knows about Kal V'chomers. Kal V'chomers, of course, in some ways, the most basic logical argument in the world. Even if you're not a Talmudic Jew, we all do Kal V'chomers. Right? You all might say, you know, if Tal Singer is enthusiastic, Kal V'chomer, Simon Kaufman is enthusiastic. Right? It's a natural kind of argument. I was looking for something to pick on Tal, you're just there. Okay? It was really about Simon, it wasn't about you. Okay, so that is a classic Kal V'chomer. Although I want to point out, guys, there's two places in the world you can't do Kal V'chomers. One is punishments, and the other is sports. Okay? In halacha, you're not allowed to do it for punishments. You can't say, if we give A a punishment, kal v'chomer, we give B. It's a rule called Ein Onshin Min Hadin. It's very interesting. Why not? That's a topic for another shekoli. Why do we give punishments based on kal v'chomers? And also, in sports, you can't do kal v'chomer. You can't say, you know, because the Lakers beat the Knicks, the Knicks beat the Warriors, like the, whatever. It doesn't work. There's no transitive property in sports. Okay, but in any case, what do we have here? What's the kal v'chomer of Avnei Nezer? If the Mechilta thinks full-fledged conversion doesn't save Amalekites, kal v'chomer, then what?
The seven.
Everybody got that? Got the kal v'chomer? So what's he assuming? Right? It goes together. If, according to the Mechilta, they wouldn't be able to fully convert, nor would they be able to be noachai. That's the kal v'chomer. Look what the Gon from Chabin said. He named me Azir Gashti B'Zev Chashavti Shiyesh Lomer Lehefech. That's quite fascinating. What are you going to claim? Yeah, why is the opposite? The rock le kablo shiwa le kal yisroli meklenado avliot ger toshav shapir mekablenoto. Jordan, exactly your point. How did the Gon from Chabin want to claim it? All the Mechilta meant was Amalekites can't become Jews, but maybe they can shed their Amalek status by or shed the need to kill them by taking. And it's a question: which way is the kal v'chomer? I've got that again. I've got the kal v'chomer going both ways. Again, what did Avnei Nezer assume? If we're not going to let them, if even fully converted can't help you save them, so Noachai law certainly can't save them. That is the Avnei Nezer. The Gon from Chabin went to reverse the argument. No, maybe we have this eternal grudge against Amalek. We don't allow full conversion. But if you're a moral person, you accept the Noachai laws, we don't kill you. Right? And then, according to that, notice what would happen? The Rambam and the Mechilta would no longer be in opposition with each other. Right? Everyone, you guys understand? Yeah, Tom. No, but that's what Jordan said it carefully before. You're right. You'd have to say, that's what Jordan said very sharply before. You'd have to say, so you somehow, in a certain sense, haven't shed your Amalek status, but you're an Amalekite that we no longer need to kill. That's what you'd have to say. That once Amalekite is a Noachite, he is a Noachite Amalekite, who's not Chayav Mita, but since he's still an Amalekite, he can't convert to Judaism. You're right. That's right, Jordan. You said it very well before. That's a good Chakir. Or you say, if he's really shed his Amalekite status, and at that point, there should be no limitations. Okay? And we're good at that? Okay. Let us see if we have some other answers here. Okay, so let's go back to source 10. Let's go back to source 10. Again, we're still on the reconciliation mode. Is there a way to reconcile everybody together? Yeah, John Seidel.
I have a question about degrees. And him says, like, is he the one who says that, like, if they can convert to the, not because they lose their Amaleki status?
That was Kesem Mishnah was the one who said that.
So does that mean metaphorically? Because the.
Why does it be a metaphor?
Because, like, if they lose Amaleki status,
yeah, why wasn't it real?
No, if they keep the seven open it up, they're still Amalekim. They're not Kukamers, they're still Amalekim.
No, but legally they no longer have the status of Amalek.
So what are they considered? Like, what are
they are generic non-Jews. Noachide non-Jews.
Okay.
Okay? Can I sing you out for praise and funny at the same time?
Sure.
It's obvious, guys, his chakras tend to become amazing. Okay, I think he's, what do you like, 12 for the last 13?
That's
okay, but he's also the first person in history of writing to sleep in Rabbi Aaron's office and Meshachas on the same day. Okay, no one has ever done that before. Okay, that is really, that takes talent. Okay. All right, guys. So let's go back to source 10. Okay, back to source 10. Okay, now this is a good example where you get help by the Bar Ilan program. If you go to, guys, when you're in college next year, you should all find access to the Bar Ilan program. Let's say there's a Gemara page you're interested in. You click on Mefarshim, gives you a list of all these commentaries. I have no idea who did it. Someone in a book called Daf Al Daf quotes all kinds of obscure sources. Sources you would never get to otherwise, and you just get it there from the Daf Al Daf. So here's an example. He quotes the Gilyone Hashas, which is a Sefer of Yosef Engel. He says, Gilyone Hashas Tirates. And again, we're trying to figure out, now we're not reconciling the Rambam Mechilta. What are we trying to reconcile? The Gemara in Gittin and the Mechilta. Sheshach b'ofen she'isha mizera malik nisit l'gai she'enu mizera malik. What did it say in the Gemara in Gittin? Mnei banav shel Haman. But wait, they might have had some Amalek ancestry and also some, presumably, no, also some non-Amalek. Presumably, like, non-Jews don't always just marry among their own kind. Sometimes Italians marry, like, people from Iceland. It could happen, right? So maybe you had an intermarriage routine, Amalekites and non-Amalekites. Now, here's the interesting thing, guys. How does that play out in Jewish law? So here's something interesting that Jordan Stab was very struck by. There's a much larger conversation, but I think definitely food for thought. Definitely a good college paper to be written here. What do we assume in Jewish law? Of course, identity is based on matrilineal descent, right? We don't care who the father is. If you have a mother who's Jewish, you're Jewish. If your mother's not Jewish, you're not Jewish, right? Very long-standing Jewish practice, natural in descent. It sounds like in the non-Jewish world, right, halacha says, patrilineal in descent. Right, who you are depends on your dad, not your mom. So that's a very interesting question. How come for Jews it's based on mom, and for the non-Jews it's based on the father? But once you say that, what could you plug in very easily? Who is somewhere along the line of these B'nai Baman and Shal Haman, what happened? You had a father who was, I don't know, a Spaniard, and a mother who was, no, a mother was a Amalekite. So indeed, these kids were direct descendants of Haman, but what emerges, despite being direct descendants of Haman, they weren't Amalekites, right? They are Spaniards, because it depends on the dad and not the mom. Okay, so that again, if this is all within the reconciliation approach, you want to put everything together. You could say the Mechilta is still right, but they're not really Amalekites, B'nai Ban of Shal Haman, if you want them to stick to the position that they can't convert. Okay, Alex, you look a little intrigued. What do you think about it? Okay. Okay, correct. Now, to be fair, it's true the most significant aspect of identity in Judaism is based on the mother, natural descent. But obviously there are other items, such as whether you're a Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, which depend on the father. So I didn't mean that the father is not at all a player in your identity. But the most essential identity is, are you Jewish or not, right? Okay, I'm sorry, now finish your point, Alex. Oh, that's interesting. Alex, where are you going to college next year? Cornell, okay, you can write that paper. When you're not doing hotel management, it's a great paper. Like, identity, matrilineal and patrilineal identity in Judaism. Okay, while you're on one of those cold nights in Ithaca, it'll be a great paper. Yeah.
Don't Chinese Jews believe that it goes through the father, not the mother?
Chinese Jews, I have no idea what Chinese Jews believe. But I'll just say that if we have a vote, though, they're going to lose. Yeah. No, what's he arguing? If you have an Amalekite mother and a Spanish father, you're Spanish, you're not Amalekite. Right? That's the argument here. Why is that shocking? No, so I admit we have to ask the question, which I didn't answer. Why would we say that Jews is matrilineal and non-Jews is patrilineal? That is a reasonable question. But he asserts it. I think it's an explicit Gemara, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Very good. Very good. So if you look at the very end of source 10, Lewis, excellent. He was bothered by your point. What does he say at the very end there? Ein ha-kavana mimnei banav mamash elam yotzei chalatzav. It's not such a crazy claim. Lewis was saying, if you read bnei banav literally, what's the problem? Oh, bnei banav sounds like it's all along the male line. And if it's all along the male line, right, what does it mean bnei banav? The sons of the sons. But I think what he says is quite reasonable. What might B'nai B'nav be a way of saying? That's the way of saying the descendants, right? It could easily happen in language that B'nai B'nav will just come to mean descendants. So, Lewis, I thought it was a pretty strong answer, actually. If B'nai B'nav just means descendants, so his shot works out. Yeah. What? Why would that affect this? Oh, I see. I guess, you know, well, maybe they had kids already, some of them. All right. I'm just positive. Maybe that would be the answer. Okay, well, good summer. Okay, great. Let us get to one second to last source, and the last source to wrap it up here. Okay, this is also a great source to know. Source 11. Okay, this is a safer. Everybody has to look at this sometime in their life. Okay, as you guys know, there's a famous, interesting mathematical. Are you, Robert? You okay there? I can look a little tired. This would be right up your alley, morality and Judaism. Okay, good. Okay. There is a famous conundrum because we know the Gemara says there's 613 mitzvot. But the Gemara never lists what they are. So different Rishonim try to come with lists to match the 613. Rav Saadia Gaon, the famous Jewish philosopher, has a poem where in poetic form he outlines the 613. It's really, really interesting poem. But what's even better is that there was a Rav in the 20th century named Yeruchim Fishel Perlau who wrote an immensely long commentary on the poem. In fact, I'm often frustrated because if I try to... you guys say it. Sephardim say it on Shavuot, right? There you go, guys. See? If you are Syrian or Egyptian, you recite it on Shavuot. Who's the other person? Jacob Matron, do you guys say it? I know, but maybe others Spartan do it also. Okay. But apparently Turkish Jews do not. Okay. Who's Turkish? Zach, you guys don't say it on short?
I've never been
Okay. All right, so in any case, so, wait, you decided to come back because I talked about Sephardim? What happened? Okay, so if you're ever learning the Sefer, it's very hard, it's very frustrating because you can't find the poem. Because there'll be like four lines of poem, then our Perlow comments like 36 pages, and you're like, where's the poem continue? Right, so, but it's an amazing commentary, really amazing commentary. So let's see what our Perlow says. Okay? V'ra'iti laharab Megillat Sefer. Sha'amad b'tmial mechilta, medarmina b'banam shel Haman. The same problem we'll have. Mechilta says no converts. Gemara Gittin says, Haman's descendants are having a grand old time in yeshiva over there. How could that be? What's his new theory? He creates a new category. What's his category here? Amalekites can convert to Judaism. It's just when they do so, they don't marry Jews. Right? Maybe they'll marry some other Amalekite convert. So again, you might not like it, but if you have this reconciliation impulse, that's a way to reconcile everything. What did the Mechilta mean? Not that we don't accept them. Of course we accept them. But we still have some kind of stigma in our mind. We don't want to marry them. So they could convert to Judaism and not marry us. So notice again, if you wanted to reconcile Gittin with the Mechilta, we have a couple of methods. What would be the Gilyoni HaShas's method? They're descendants of Amalek, but they're not really Amalek, because they're from the maternal line. What would be this new method? Oh, they can convert, but they don't actually marry us. Okay, which would be different than the Gon from Chibin, right? You get all the theories. What did the Gon from Chibin say? They can become Ger Tosha, but not Ger Tzedek. So you have a lot of positions here. You could say they can't convert at all. They can be Ger Tosha, but not Ger Tzedek. Or they could be, actually, four positions. I didn't realize that right now. Position one. Oh, this is good. This will be on the final, guys. Get it down. Position one, they can't convert at all. Position two, they can only convert to being Noahites. Position three, they can be Jews, but can't marry Jews. Position four, they are full-fledged Jewish converts. Yeah. His name was Rabbi Yerucham Fishel Perlow. You can just call him Perlow. I mean, this category? It might have to do with Amon and Moab, but okay. No, so the truth is, it might be that the same is true about Amon and Moab. I mean, it could be he's working off something that already exists in the system. It could be that Amon and Moab can convert but not marry Jews. So maybe he's working off that category and applying it to Amalek. That would make it stronger, right? The category would exist. Ah, very good. Beautiful. Jordan Stauber, guys. Today he's Shir Chloe Stauber. Excellent point. Right? What are we trying to do here? We're trying to reconcile the Mechilta with the Gemara in Gittin. That's his message, right? Oh, the Mechilta says they can convert. Gittin indicates they can. I've got an answer. They can convert. The Mechilta just meant they can't marry us. Okay, who can tell me what Jordan Stauber said? Why that's a very difficult reading of the Mechilta? This is what Raprilla points out by the way. Raprilla didn't say this. He quotes the Megillat Sefer. He goes on to reject it. Without looking inside, guys, tell me why it's a bad reading of the Mechilta. Why it's a very difficult reading of the Mechilta. What did the Mechilta say? That's why David killed the guy. Right? Well, if the halakha is they convert to Judaism, they can't marry us, you don't kill them at that point. Right? Obviously, the Mechilta is saying they can't convert at all. Right? It's extremely difficult. It's a forced reading of the Mechilta. Yeah, Jordan. Why would you say that?
This guy is married.
Ah. No, isn't that really the same problem at the end of the day?
No, it's not the same problem.
No,
what you're saying is, according to the field, they still hold that the Malachite converts can't marry someone, but they're just saying, like...
I see what you're saying. You're saying the context of the Mechilta is not a marriage context in the slightest.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
It's based on the
Pasuk. Right, yeah, you're right. That is a separate problem. So the Megillat Sefer is quite difficult. It's quite difficult. Okay, before we get to the absolute last thing here, guys. Yeah, who has the hand up? Yeah, John.
Isn't there a concept in Torah that someone who's not married is considered dead?
Okay.
So if someone converts, the Mechilta says that you have to kill them. If they convert and they can't get married, aren't they like they're considered dead anyway?
Look, you have to really be careful about one thing, John. There's some very powerful analogies and metaphors in Chazal, but that doesn't mean they have legal weight.
Okay.
Right? Can I give you an example, guys? Like, this is a very powerful, beautiful Gemara. The Gemara says, it's better for a person to be thrown into a fire rather than publicly embarrass somebody else. Okay, I don't know what the biblical example is. No, that's Yehuda and Tamar. Okay, but in any case, let me ask a question. If I take that literally, what should I conclude? I used to think there were three Averot that demand martyrdom, right? Murder, idolatry, and sexual morality. What does it turn out?
Four.
There's four, right? Better to be killed than to publicly embarrass me. But it could be that was hyperbole. It doesn't really mean, right? So again, I don't make light of not having a child. It's definitely a tragic thing. But it's not like in lieu of death penalty. Kids, oh, we'll give you two choices. You know, it's like that scene in Life of Brian. They're lining up if they want crucifixion or not. You guys know that scene? Okay, so it doesn't work that way. Like, you're lying for a death penalty. Would you like a death penalty or just remain single? Right? It's not a substitute. Yeah.
Also, can you reconcile by saying that embarrassing someone's like killing them? So it's
arbitrary. Oh, yeah. Okay, that's clever. There are Rishonim who go in that direction, but not for us right now. Okay, very good time. Okay, I just want to make one last point. I want to sneak it two more, so I'm not going to be sure I'll get to it. Look at the tzitzilis for 1 second. Okay, now again, what have we been doing so far? We know what I call the reconciliation impulse. Let's say we could put it all together. Okay, look at the last line of Sitzeliezer. V'zeh sh'Rambam dacha et ha-mechilta mehalacha. How does he take it? What did the Rambam do with the mechilta? He didn't try to reconcile himself. He rejected it. Stop reconciling everything. People disagree. It's okay. Right? The Rambam just didn't accept the mechilta. Now, how did the Rambam not accept the mechilta? Yeish lomer v'disaver d'shas dilan. Good word, guys. Shas dilan. What's dilan? Anybody? Oh, we need an Aramaic expert here. Anybody, Dilan? Our Shas, the Bavli, Poligalze. What does he want to claim? The Rambam looked at Chazal, and he said, Chazal have conflicting sources. Which after the Chazal tells you you can't convert from Amalek? Which source? Which source that you can't convert? The Mechilta. What did the Rambam have on the other side of the scales? Which source in Chazal indicated you can convert? The Gorngin. So Ram had a choice. He can't possibly like everybody. And he follows the Gemara and Gittin. So that would be his conclusion that Amalek could convert fully. We'll go like Gemara and Gittin. Like, if you're like me, you love that. That's true. Even Amalekites have their chance. They can be full-fledged Jews. They can even marry us. Right? That's Bnei Bon of Shel Hillel. Okay, before I get to the last point and take any questions, let's just go. I'm going to show you where all four theories would emerge. Okay, let's go work our timeline, guys. If I go with the Mechilta, what am I saying? They can't convert. Let's say I assume they can't convert at all. How would I deal with the Ger Maliki and the Psukim? What is it about the Ger Maliki? I might say like the Rabbah, namely that he wasn't really a Malikite. What would I do with Bnei Ban of Shel Hillel? What would I do with that? The Gemara and Gittin? Maybe I'll go with the Gilead of Shas about Patrilino, okay? So that's if you want to take the position they can't convert at all. Okay, next. If I want to say they can be Noachites, but not a full-fledged conversion, that was the Gon from Chibin. Right, weird source, not a Chazal, but which other source seemed to indicate the way? A Rishon? Which Rishon might have indicated that? Well, who said they could just become Noachites? Who said that? Rambam. Rambam said he comes from Noachites. Now, the Avnei Nezer thought there was a Kal V'Chomer, but notice what the Gaon from Chibin did. He reversed the Kal V'Chomer. Okay, great. Let's move along a little bit further. Now we get to the Megillat Sefer. We're still in the reconciliation impulse. What does the Megillat Sefer want to claim? Go with the Gemara and Gittin. They could actually convert. But what does the Mechilta mean? They can't marry it. Jordan Stab was right. Very, very difficult read of the Mechilta. Finally, we get to the fourth stage. We go to the Tzitz Eliezer. What does he say? What's the best method of reconciliation? Stop reconciliation. They argue. Chazal argue with each other. It's okay. They do it every page of Talmud, in fact. So the Mechilta thought they couldn't convert. Gittin thought they can. But that would be interesting. According to that, the one post-take we have on this issue would be the Rambam. And what's the Rambam's psak? That they can. So as I said, I admit I'm not fully neutral in this issue. I have an inclination. And I'm very happy with that psak. Again, that would indicate, Alex Malfson, that you can escape your genetic destiny. Right? A Molochite, and not even just by full-fledged conversion. Even just by being an Molochite, you establish a different identity. You're no longer an Molochite. Yeah, Jordan.
No.
Ah, well, that's cute. You want to say that we already see what's machloket, so maybe David possibly mechilta. It's machloket between David Melch and Rambam, right? David possibly mechilta, but the Rambam possibly Gemara and Gittin. Yeah, you could say that, but I think you wouldn't be so motivated. Meaning, I would argue, what's the simplest reading of Sefer Shmuel? That he killed him because he killed Joel. So why contort yourself unless you're convinced that Amalekites can't convert, right? Okay, you could disagree, Jordan. Put in your Sefer, Joey.